Good morning. Welcome to Atheist Talk and KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We appreciate all of you for tuning into the show. Today is Sunday, March 12th, 2017. I'm Scott Lohman. Joining me in the studio today are Eric and Owen Jane and Maddie Love. Be sure to stay tuned in later in the program for the American Atheist Viewpoint during the fourth segment of the hour. We welcome listener interaction during the live show with your phone calls to 952-946-6205 or your emails to radio@mnatheist.org. Parenting is a challenge. Being an atheist and humanist adds to the challenge. Our culture is quite religious, and it can be difficult to find resources for free-thinking parents. Today, we're going to discuss the challenges and fun of parenting without religion. You can find links and program archives on the Minnesota Atheist website. So, Eric, Owen, and Maddie, welcome to Atheist Talk.
Hey, thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Hi, so I just kind of wanted to start the conversation with kind of going around the table. We're all parents here, except for Owen. Owen's not a parent yet. or maybe never will be. I don't know. But can we go around the table once and just give the audience kind of a quick resume of our parenting credentials so that the listeners know we're coming more from a place of experience rather than a place of ignorance?
Yeah. So would you like me to start?
Sure, either one.
All right, so... Hello, my name's Eric, and I have three kids. Owen is here with me. He's 11 years old. He's my youngest son. I have another son, Robbie. He's 14, and he's in eighth grade. And then I've got a daughter who is 18 years old, and she's a freshman over at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire.
And I'm Scott Lohman, and I my son is 21, and with my wife, we have what we refer to in the atheist community as a mixed marriage. She's religious, and I'm not. So we had the challenge of trying to decide how to bring him up. So initially, we didn't bring him to church, and then she decided when he was about five that she was going to take him to church. So she took him to church and got him baptized. But at that point, I knew it was going to be an uphill battle for her on that part, because as a six-month-old, he was a thinking child. So when I would put in the hand in the puppet and try and change my voice and say, look at the puppet, was he looking at the puppet? No, he was looking at me, say, with the expression of, Dad is trying something funny, I shall humor him. So, that, you know, there was that. So, you know, at that point, when he would study things, then I knew, yeah, he's not going to be long for the religious world.
I'm in a mixed marriage also, but I've got five kids. We've got 11 grandkids, not a 12th on the way. But, yeah, so my youngest is 21. My oldest is 33.
Wow.
So, wow. So, yeah, sounds like we have a lot of parenting experience kind of among us. None of us are...
You look so young. I never would have guessed that you had kids that old.
As one of my heroes, the doctor once said, I moisturize. And Owen, I'm assuming you still don't have kids yet.
Not that you know of.
zing. Good answer.
And how old are you going to, Owen?
I'm 11.
Yes, so good. Good. That's good to know that.
Yeah.
all right, so like with the concept of, and Scott, you brought up mixed marriages. I guess I want to start with how do you avoid religious messages? We live in a culture where we're mired in religious, specifically Christian privilege. How do you navigate that, like if you're raising a child?
For me, it was exposing him to it. I would put the religious radio station on in the car, and we would listen. I would have him listen, and we'd ask questions. And I said, what would you think of that statement? On ones that he wouldn't believe, he'd go, So when it wasn't going over, it was like, okay, no, their argument didn't get through to him on that part. So it was pretty easy. But teaching him to listen to what they're saying, think about it, and then also come at him from the free-thinking side on how to approach things critically. The neat thing is that he was into shows like Mythbusters. He was into math as a kid. So he was into using the reason and the tools to study things. And that, to me, helped a lot as far as that goes. And then it's pretty easy to ask him questions about the messages he was hearing and what he was thinking of those.
I just want to say, what kid doesn't like Mythbusters? It's just a show of explosions.
Yep.
Yeah, but showing the scientific method to solve problems and the importance of math when you're, you know, deciding to figure out how things are going on. So, yeah, can't go wrong with that.
So the explosions are kind of like a gateway to more critical thinking.
It's a gateway drug.
A gateway drug.
And for us, I guess what I did is my approach was to be open about religion. It's a thing. It's a fact. Owen's grandma is very, very religious. My family is very religious, you know, my family of origin. So we would just talk about what it is that they understand, what they believe, what they think. And I have invited Owen several times to go to a local church just to check it out, kind of like a sociological field experiment, just kind of thing, just to see what it's like. He hasn't taken me up on the invitation yet, but
you really should. You need to check it out because, and it's not like when I was growing up, or you know, us adults, in that how much the religious language was used in daily things. You would have more Christian-related metaphors that would people be using, whereas nowadays that's fading, and so you don't quite need to have the religious language, but it does help to know that. That's why when my wife took him to church, I was not that afraid, because he was going to get the exposure. He was going to what I would refer to as, quote, a good evangelical, you know, liberal Lutheran church in North Minneapolis that had a very diverse population that was going to it, and now has a lesbian as their lead pastor on that. So they're not the ones that are hitting the hardcore, you know, fundamentalist things of you must do it this way and this way and this way and this way on that part. So he got the exposure without having, to me, the brain damaging part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the brain damaging part would be a fun thing to experience. You know, one thing that we do is we do like The Simpsons and the Futurama. So we watch these shows that are kind of irreverent and they bring up some things. You know, any fan of The Simpsons knows that they have a lot of like religious references, and there's a couple episodes that make reference to Bible stories specifically. So then that's an opportunity where I explain to my kids, oh, here's why that is a joke. Here's the origin of that particular thing that they're referencing on The Simpsons.
Yep.
Well, and I think exposing ourselves and kids to that, if nothing else, it brings them, even if they don't talk about specifically religious stuff or explain it, it brings up the concept that this isn't a topic that we deserve special reverence. This isn't a topic that's off limits to talk about. We can discuss it the same as we discuss everything else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, both of you mentioned that you had close family members and dealt with family members that are religious. How much influence do these family members have on your kids growing up? I'm assuming, Scott, being married to a Christian or somebody who went to church, that your wife would have a bit of influence. And Eric, you had mentioned a grandma coming from a religious background. So how much influence did that have on not just your kids, but like how the choices you made in raising your kids?
It just made aware of not being, you know, aggressive or pushy on my side of it, but basically being there to answer the questions on that part and letting him learn what was going on in that. Because when he would be visiting my parents are still religious and go to church regularly. So when he would go with them, they would have him with. My dad liked being back in the time where they could go back into the seats where in the back of the church for new parents and just grinning wildly because he was holding his grandson on that part. So they enjoyed that. He was just, they had a great time doing that. And that was no big deal because, you know, when they're that size, they're just enjoying the experience because they're hanging out with grandma and grandpa. But as far as them, you know, trying to push religion on, that's not something they did. They left, you know, they were very careful about that. As far as, you know, him going to church, it was like once a week with that. And then he would went through confirmation as well, but he didn't last much more beyond that as far as even staying in the religion. At that point, he was on his downhill slide. It was he would ask more questions on that. And then he and his girlfriend, watched the Bill Nye Ken Ham debate, and we're making fun of Ken Ham. So at that point, we knew that that was pretty much taken care of it. My wife one day goes, your son just said he's an atheist. It's like, yes, sorry, it was doomed to happen.
You know, for us, it never really came up, I guess. My mom and my dad were 4 hours away, so their influence didn't really make its way up to Minnesota. They're from Iowa. I'm from Iowa. Owen's grandma, maternal grandma, she doesn't really push anything as far as I know. Have you felt anything, Owen?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I know that the one time we went to a church, it was a Unitarian church in St. Paul. I don't even know. I think it was like off of Grand Avenue. You guys might know where that church is. I don't know. But we went there, and Owen, do you remember that? You might have been too young.
No, I do not.
It was boring. I remember my, you know, Robbie and Ella were there, and they were bored. It was for Christmas. We thought it would be kind of fun to experience some sort of like a church-themed Christmas thing with the Unitarian Church, but it didn't go over all that well.
Yeah, and besides, Unitarian is not really that hardcore in terms of religion that. So,
right.
They go with the philosophy and that's they're helpful. And the local ones really have some good stuff on education, including good solid religious education and good solid sex education. So They've got their uses there. So we're coming up on the break. So please stay with us through the break and listen to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Scott Lohman. If you have a comment or a question, please call us at 952-946-6205 or send an email to radio@matheist.org. Eric, Owen, Maddie, welcome back to Atheist Talk.
Thanks.
Hello.
Thank you.
So during the break, we're having a conversation on the best way to cook and eat babies. I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
I only got cooked and eaten 5 years ago.
And resurrected.
Yes.
It was a miracle.
So, Owen, being the youngest person here, you bring a different point of view to the conversation since you're actually in school right now and are actually being parented. Do teachers or other students, do they treat you differently because you're an atheist?
Not really teachers, but students definitely do. I'd say I actually lose about 50% of my friends just when I say, I'm an atheist, because a lot of my friends like to bring up, what church do you go to? And then I say, I don't go to church. And then immediately, pretty much every single Christian or Lutheran's follow-up question is, do you even believe in God? And then I say, no. And then they're just like, I'm not your friend anymore.
Oh, that's terrible. That is horrible. I'm sorry. Do they ever try to preach at you, or do most of them just like after that leave you alone and quit harassing you?
Usually they leave me alone.
So you had mentioned something like before we started recording about a Mr. Ainz shirt. Did you want to talk about it? You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, but
I'll talk about it. So I'm in school. And I'm walking around, and then these kids who are, like, really, really baseball-y kind of kids, you know, those kind of kids, they're just like, isn't it St. Paul Saints? And then I explained it to them, and then one of them goes and gets a teacher, and the teacher says, yeah, you have to turn your shirt inside out.
That's just, that's not right.
What shirt was it exactly?
Mr. Paul Ainz shirt.
Oh. Yeah, my grandson, he's 14, and he is a huge baseball fan, and he wanted me to, and he's also, he goes, he does church group stuff and everything else. He even wanted one of those shirts, so.
Nice.
Yeah, he's like, that's cool. I love the Saints. I'd love to get one of those shirts. So I'm sorry that you had to deal with some really jerk kind of kids and a stupid teacher.
And by the way, August 12th. Is going to be the next St. Paul Saints game,
yes.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Atheists. Sorry,
good
I
plug,
injected that
plug.
In there.
Okay, definitely, yeah. because I always forget when it is, and then usually forget to buy tickets until it's too late and regret it. And my grandson gives me a hard time. Yeah, exactly. So basically, that's the sound my grandson makes because he wants me to take him. So he's like, I want to go to that game too. He's like, anyway.
I'll see you there.
I hope so. Yeah. Wait, which day was that again?
August 12th.
August 12th.
Yeah.
Fantastic. There we go. That's on there.
2 weeks before the eclipse.
That's right. Yeah.
So usually around Christmas, there seems, speaking of school stuff, there seems to be a school that wants to do a religious program of some sort. And I'm wondering if that's a big deal to anybody here. And if so, like, how do you handle it, like, when your fellow classmates are, like, saying, hey, you're looking forward to the Christmassy thing, or when you find out your kids are going to be either in it or having to watch, like, this a religious program in your public school?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't an issue for me. My son wasn't in either choir or band or anything like that, so I didn't have to worry about that issue at the school.
Well, you know, Owen's in band. He's in choir, but I don't think that they've really done anything.
Not in choir.
No, you're not in choir. But you sang. You did some sort of thing like a couple weeks ago where you sang, right? It was like the fifth grade thing.
Yes.
So anyway, point being is that I don't think that we've ever experienced anything with our public school where it's been an overtly religious kind of thing. It's just been pretty secular kind of music.
Yep.
So are you worried about at all about the portrayal of the current Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos? She seems to portray herself as an evangelical, wanting to insert Jesus into the classroom. Is that something that, if you haven't had any problems in the past, like, that you worry might happen in the future?
Well, yeah. And my big thing with her is that she just wants to allocate public money into, you know, the so-called school choice voucher program, where you just kind of fund private school, religious schools with taxpayer money. That's my biggest thing with her. What I will say, though, is that, you know, being a parent of three kids now who've gone through public school, I got two in the process of going through it, got one in college, Pledge of Allegiance every morning is something that they do in our school district.
Yes.
And it's something that I did initiate a conversation with the principal of my daughter's school, my oldest child's school, when she was in elementary school. And I was just advised by the principal that I should take that up with the local state rep. So I did. I sent an email, CC'd the principal too, just so everybody was on the loop. It didn't go anywhere. And I know that I could have pushed it further if I really wanted to. I could have taken it up with the school board. But there's there's a fine line. What do you do as a parent? Do you really try to push the issue? Do you fight it? Because I think that I'm on the right side of that. But at what cost? You know, that kind of puts your kids in a position where they're vulnerable now to certain kinds of attacks. They're under the spotlight. And I still don't know if I'm making the right decision or not. I've had my daughter go through it, public schools. My son's in eighth grade. He'll be going to high school next year. And my son here, Owen, my youngest, he's in fifth grade. So I still don't know if I should have pushed it further or if I was right by not pushing it further. But Betsy DeVos, that's somebody who absolutely is not going to help address that particular issue with the Pledge of Allegiance. It's just going to get worse as far as I can
tell. It's probably just going to be, I pledge allegiance, God, God, God is the best God.
That will be Betsy DeVos's new Pledge of Allegiance. Yep. How did I tell you how to do the Pledge of Allegiance?
You just told me to say a random word. Like, for example, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under Mario. Because who doesn't believe in Mario?
Yeah, right.
That works.
Yeah, we would just pick that. You be creative. You pick whoever it is that you want to pledge your allegiance to under
pancake,
whoever.
Pancake chocolate waffles.
Yeah. So that's how we kind of address the issue.
Yeah, that gives you a chance to, like, you can choose to, like, be quiet and have everybody not seeing you talk. Or you can keep talking and then nobody knows, you know, because it's more challenging to, like, be the activist in a group full of, like, kids that you can't get away. Like, you got to see the same people every day. That teacher has authority over you, and they can, if they want to be mean, teachers could be mean and make your life miserable.
Yeah, right, so. Right. Yeah, and I will say that the principal, when I did have that conversation earlier on, was, well, you can have your daughter leave during the Pledge of Allegiance, but then what sense does that make? You know, school, you want to be inclusive. It's important to get along with your classmates. You don't want to be the outlier who leaves during the Pledge of Allegiance every day. Like, that's not a real viable solution.
And here's the thing. You're pledging to America. It's not you pledging to God.
Right. Very important distinction, Owen.
Yep, and we'll continue this discussion, so please stay with us for the break. You're listening to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Religion generally counts in people returning to the church when they become parents. Many people want help with the challenge of raising children. Till recently, there haven't been many resources for raising free-thinking children. Today, we're discussing being parents without religion. Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950, KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. If you have a question or a comment, please call us at 952-946-6205 or email at radio at mnatheist.org. I'm Scott Lohman. Atheist Talk is produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, and Cucumbers Restaurant. If you'd like to advertise on this program, please contact us at radio at mnatheist.org. The radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of listeners. If you're able to help with a donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page. Minnesota Atheists is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. You can find out more information about the Humanists of Minnesota at humanistsofmn.org. Our music is composed by member Brent Michael Davids, and this week we want to thank Nancy for her donations. Check the schedule for book clubs, discussion groups, pub crawls, and movie nights and other gatherings throughout the year, as well as sign up for meetups. Listen to podcasts of previous programs, subscribe to Atheist Weekly email, and become a member, all at minnesotaatheists.org. And now back to our final segment with Eric and Owen Jane and Maddie Love.
Yeah, thanks, everybody, for sticking around. I don't know where you would have went, but.
Let's see. Somewhere?
Not church.
Yes, not church.
So, like, when we have this conversation about atheism and parenting or growing up as an atheist versus growing up in a church, we usually focus on the more challenging aspects of growing up or raising kids in this world of Christian privilege. But I've actually found personally, since I've become an atheist in the last 10 years or so, that it's easier in some ways to raise kids. There's less things to navigate and less moral quandaries. Mm-hmm. But do you want to talk about maybe some of the positive aspects of growing up atheist or raising kids or grandkids now at this point? Not that you're raising your grandkids, but being involved in their lives as an atheist versus that a Christian or Jew or a Muslim or Hindu or not might have.
Yeah,
I think that like the easiest part is not having to worry about making sure things conform to a certain belief system on that. It's like, you know, we're open to discuss topics with a wide open range on that because there's not we have our approach as atheists to certain things. But when it comes to, you know, things like sex education and that, you can have a lot more fun because you're not having to, you know, basically state we have to do it this way and this way and this way. And you don't want to think about that and you don't want to think about that and you don't want to think about that. So it really helps on that part. It also means that you can find more fun ways to see if you can get your kid to blush up to red, too, when you start talking about that kind of stuff. So it's fun. And so it does open up the topics on that and actually makes for some really fun discussions. I mean, that was the thing I enjoyed is getting his perspective, my son's perspective on things when we'd have discussions while we were out in the car, you know, heading off someplace, is that we could talk about a lot of things. And he could, with his one friend who didn't like some of the crazies I would put on the radio, he said, "That guy has a wee bit of a screechy voice. Why do you have to listen to him?" So.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think that it is an easier thing to do to raise kids as an atheist, except for the fact, of course, that our community that we share with other people, our neighbors, is predominantly Christian. So there's like this one little tiny cultural aspect of community that we don't get to participate in, which is like church and all that. But set that aside, there's a lot of other opportunities to still engage with the community without going to church. And without having all that Bible teaching. So I remember being a kid. I remember being Owen's age and going to youth group, going to youth ministry on Wednesday nights for Awanas, going to Bible camp, Bible school, Sunday school, church, all that stuff. So I got a really good, healthy indoctrination. So I appreciate the fact that, unlike me as a kid, I don't have to deal with my son or my daughter or my other son asking me questions that are impossible to answer, like, why do bad things happen if God is all good and all knowing? Like, I don't have to deal with that because I never put them through some sort of a weird belief system like that. So I think it's easier. We just get to, like, go straight into the world and perspectives without needing to deal with explaining the impossible. What do you think, Owen?
I think it's a lot better because, well, I don't have to wake up at 8 o'clock and go to church for 2 hours. Well, I did wake up at 8 o'clock to go here, but this is actually fun. And I'm glad I don't have to get baptized, a.k.a. drowned. So I think it's a lot better being an atheist child.
Nice.
Going back to our Pledge of Allegiance conversation, we had somebody who wanted to remain anonymous. They had their alternative Pledge of Allegiance. And it was, I pledge allegiance to the Constitution of the United States of America and to the democracy for which it stands, one nation. Fill in the blank as you see fit. I thought that was good.
I like it.
Okay, I wanted to share that. So, you know, you guys are talking, you know, and you're just talking about being baptized or not having to be baptized. And Eric answering questions you didn't know how to answer. You know, until my youngest son was about 5 or 6, I was a fundamentalist Christian. And my church and I taught him all about hell, and to the point where that he was warning other children and family members about going to hell if they didn't love Jesus. How do you equip children to deal with kids like the one that I had at the time? Owen, how would you deal with somebody who was coming up to you and saying, like, well, you're going to go to hell if you don't believe in Jesus? Like, how do you deal with that?
Usually, I don't really want to put up a big argument. Then I feel like a lot of other kids are going to, like, be jerks to me. So usually I'll just walk away from the kid and try to avoid them for a few weeks.
There you go. That's a good response. I know Owen is kind of like me too. It's more important to be socially friendly. Like, you just want to have friends and be happy and stuff without needing to go through that. So you just try to mitigate, you know, that kind of conversation quickly.
Yep.
But I know with Ella, with my oldest daughter, my oldest child, my only daughter, oh, gosh, she was probably like 9 or 10 years old. And I actually witnessed that exact same exchange with a kid. It was in the summer, and she had just gotten out of like a session of Bible school. And I get it. I know it because I experienced it. I went to Bible school. I know what they say. I know what they teach. And this girl was scared. She's 9, 10 years old. And she's asking my daughter, hey, Ella, are you going up there or down there? And she's pointing with her finger up there or down there. And we were walking over to the quick trip or quick shop, whatever, to get some treats.
Quick trip.
Yeah, quick trip. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for that free commercial advertising.
And as we're walking, I just interjected. And I said, look, name of girl, who I won't say, there is no hell. I'm sorry, I'm kind of like skipping ahead. But anyway, Ella said, I'm not going up there or down there. I'm going to Quick Trip. And then so it was a perfect response from her. And I just said, hey, you know, just don't worry about it. There's no hell. You don't have to worry about anybody going down there. I didn't address the whole heaven thing. I let her believe that because that's okay. Whatever. You can believe in a sanitized afterlife as a 9-year-old, 10-year-old girl. I'm not gonna quash that. But the idea that you have to teach kids that young, that there's a place for people to go to where you're going to experience torture for eternity, including your family and your friends, just because they don't believe what you believe. Well, that I felt like it was my...
I feel like that would be traumatizing.
Right. Yeah, it is, right? That is kind of traumatizing.
I think that's a pretty accurate statement.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good one. So I just said, look, there's no hell. And we just went about our day. So,
yeah, I really didn't have to deal with that much. My kid was pretty calm and is generally good at getting along with. So he tends to find sort of more like-minded kids. He managed to find a bunch of smart kids and never really worried about that he was not in the set with the coolest kids in school. I don't think it even occurred to him that that was something he had to worry about. So, you know, the fun thing with him was then just, you know, answering questions that he would come up with as you could see he was pondering things on that part and being able to, you know, to discuss the answers as opposed to just saying, well, this is the way we believe and this is what you got to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't – we only have a few minutes left, but I didn't want to not ask this last – maybe not last question, but as we're getting down, how do you handle, like, despite our best efforts to raise free-thinking kids and kids that can think for themselves, kids that – you know, how do we avoid – how do we handle it when our children become believers in any kind of irrational mumbo-jumbo or, you know, sky fairies, like – or our grandkids?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we did the whole Santa thing.
Yeah.
So, Owen, how was that for you? You experienced Santa, the Tooth Fairy, Easter Bunny, all that stuff, right? You still believe in that?
No.
What about the Easter Bunny? That's coming up soon.
The chocolate ones, yes.
Yeah.
That's the correct approach, is the chocolate ones.
Well, how did that work out for you, Owen?
I think I kind of, like, realized that, you know what, it's bogus. None of that is real. There's no way that there's this little tiny fairy that comes under your pillow and takes your tooth and then puts a dollar and then goes. Like, what does she even do with your tooth? That's what I want to know.
What does she do? That's so weird. So did you come to that conclusion on your own?
Yep. And same with Santa, because that's breaking and entering, you know? Santa Claus is going to break into your house. And then with the Easter Bunny, bunnies don't poop eggs, so.
That we know of.
Yeah.
Yes, that we know of.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess I just let the kids believe in that stuff because... I don't know. It was fun. All the other kids are doing it, and we would pretend that it was real. I don't think it was damaging, and actually it may have allowed the kids to come up to their own conclusion and think critically about these imaginary things on their own.
Yeah, our approach was just to go with him and then answer his questions honestly as he was figuring it out and, you know, basically not, you know, play along with the myth if he's asking serious questions about that so that you could – enjoy the fact that he was his critical thinking skills were kicking in.
Yeah, right.
So I think that made that a whole lot easier. It was still fun, but he would ask questions and he'd think about things, and then you'd see the gears kicking in his brain. It was great fun.
Right.
So we only have about 30 seconds left. Any final advice for listeners or resources that you would find helpful?
Well, I would say one helpful resource that I found to be helpful is Dale McGowan's book. Parenting Beyond Belief. So that's a good book to check out.
Yeah, and that's a recent book, and he's got other resources for that. So those are both great books, and he's revised those. So they are excellent resources on that. So thank you, guys. So thank you, Eric, Owen, and Maddie. And
goodbye, humans.
And I'd like to thank you for tuning into Atheist Talk. I'm Scott Lohman. This show depends on the generous support of our members, our sponsors, and donors. Join us again next Sunday. Please consider supporting the show through the donation link at mnatheist.org. The podcast or show will be on the radio page later today. Stay tuned for the American Atheist Viewpoint in the next segment. This has been Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Hello and welcome.
welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, March 12th. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and thank you as always for joining us. This week we had the reveal of the Republican health care plan. This new bill is tentatively being called the American Health Care Act, so slightly different from the Affordable Care Act. This one is ACHA, if you're one of our secular Jewish listeners, you probably are familiar with that particular sound, but the ACHA, ACHU, whatever you want to call it, the American Health Care Act has come out along with some interesting points, and I want to look at one thing in particular. A lot of folks on the religious conservative side of things have said since the Affordable Care Act came about, that the requirement that insurance cover as part of what are called essential benefits. So these are a list of 10 things that all insurance plans have to cover in both the marketplaces that were set up under the Affordable Care Act, as well as in employer-sponsored health insurance, as well as within Medicaid and Medicare. Basically, 10 things that all insurance plans had to cover. And one of those things was preventative care. The problem is that nobody really knew what preventative care was, or there wasn't a good list of it. So through regulations, the Obama administration came up with a list. And one of those things was something that ticked off a lot of religious conservatives, and that was access to contraception. So the pill or IUDs or any other type of preventative health screenings, especially for women, like pap smears, STI screening, prenatal care. All those things were included with no cost sharing, meaning you don't have to pay a copay or they don't apply to your deductible. That was unpopular because a certain percentage or a certain chunk of religious folks who have a strong number, they're certainly not a tiny minority, but they are they're certainly a minority, but they are a large and vocal minority, especially within the Republican Party, oppose the use of birth control, oppose, giving women these benefits and being able to take control of their own health. They've said over and over, that these things are burdensome on religious expression. This is what Hobby Lobby was about. This is what the Little Sisters of the Poor case was about. But a lot of that, and I've been talking about this now for years now since this has been going on, a lot of that was just a cover, excuse to put it into more constitutionally acceptable language to say, oh, you're infringing on people's rights, so we're going to on their religious expression, so we're going to use RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that has puts a higher burden on the government to find the least restrictive way of accomplishing some sort of policy outcome. Now, a lot of these groups, including Hobby Lobby, the court didn't say, it's ridiculous that you think this form of contraception causes abortion. It just doesn't. They said, well, it's not for us to determine the accuracy of their beliefs, only that they have the beliefs. So the fact that Hobby Lobby thought that forms of birth control caused abortion didn't really have any impact, or it didn't matter that they don't. The fact that those contraceptives don't actually cause abortions didn't matter, because all that mattered, according to the courts, were that Hobby Lobby and their owners felt that it did. So this under this new Republican plan that's just come out, and this is, I think, really interesting, they've kept many of the essential benefits, the required essential benefits, are still in there. They're relaxing the opportunity or the requirement that all insurance plans have to carry them. So they're going to relax it for things like Medicaid, which would would drastically reduce access of poorer people to those essential benefits. But it still covers things like mental health screenings or blood transfusions or things like that. And this notion that they're the champions of religious freedom because they care about the poor evangelical Christians that have to pay for birth control that they think causes abortions is complete bunk, because they don't care at all about carving out exemptions for Jehovah's Witnesses or who oppose things like blood transfusions or organ transplants, and they don't carve out any exemptions for Scientologists who oppose mental health screenings, and they don't carve out any exemptions for Christian Scientists who oppose the idea of religion, or excuse me, oppose the idea of healthcare as it's delivered in every American hospital. They oppose that entirely. They're not carving out exemptions for those people. And I think that shows very strongly that this has nothing to do with religion. This has everything to do with thinking that this is that it costs too much to take care of women, or that it's not the role of government to do those things. But they can't say that because when you poll people and you say, hey, should insurance have to cover contraception? Should it have to cover birth control? 75% of people say yes. Three quarters of all Americans say yes, it should. 80% of all women say that it should. So the only way that they found to attack it that was constitutionally permissible and that maybe polled slightly better was to say that it was an infringement on religion. Now, that didn't really even work that well either because about the same number say, well, too bad if you're if you're a religious employer, you don't get to deny coverage to your employees. You don't get to impose your religious views on your employees through your insurance plan. And that's, we think that's right. I mean, I don't know. You know, you get a job. It's okay. Yep, we have full insurance. Everything's great. And then you show up to work. You walk in, and they hand you the packet for your insurance company, and it says, or your insurance plan, and it says, we have insurance. But it doesn't cover anything because we're Christian Scientists and we don't believe in any medical care. That's not insurance. I don't know what that is, but it's not insurance. It's not insurance if all it covers is faith healing. It's not insurance if all it covers is the rhythm method. It's not insurance if all it covers for preventative care is getting prayed over. That's not insurance. So if the government's going to make the decision to regulate insurance, which it has, we shouldn't be saying, well, but it can't impact anyone's religious expression. Number one, because it doesn't actually impact anyone's religious expression if your employees are using contraception. If you don't want to use it, don't use it, but it's still covered. That's how insurance works, that you pay for things that maybe you're not going to use or you don't think you're going to use, but later on down the road you do. Or I, as a healthier person, pay my insurance premiums, or my employer does, and that covers the cost of people who are sicker. That's how insurance works. There's like this fundamental misunderstanding or willful misunderstanding that healthy people shouldn't have to pay anything for insurance. Well, I'm sorry, but the whole point of insurance is that you pay money so that when you need it, it's there to cover those catastrophic bills. Just a quick story before I run out of time here. I was assaulted by five people. I'm a relatively healthy, I was in my 20s at the time, person without any major health problems. I was assaulted by five people, spent 8 hours in the emergency room, and my medical bills were about $35,000. That stuff can come out of nowhere. I'm really glad I had insurance through my employer that paid for that. So if you oppose healthcare because you don't think, or health insurance and the health insurance mandate because you don't think you're going to need it, you're incorrect. That's all the time I have for this week. Thank you, as always, for joining us. If you want to learn more about our work, please visit www.atheist.org. And we'll talk to you next week. Take care.